This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike, and John, well, he braved the hurricane, and he beat the hurricane, but you know, he's still in the process of getting things back to normal. So he's not here this week, but he'll be here next week. In the meantime, I'm joined by Justin from Earl Grey. How's it going, Justin?
Oh, it's going great. Glad to be here for my first time on Stage 9.
I'm really glad to have you, especially since today's subject kind of, in my mind at any rate, ties into Star Trek The Next Generation. And that's because we're going to be talking about the new Seth MacFarlane television show, The Orville, which I think in a lot of ways is a homage to next-gen era Star Trek, but also is created by a lot of people who worked on next-gen era Star Trek. So, you know, kind of checks all the boxes in that regard. This show, it debuted on Sunday. We've only seen the pilot so far, and it is a show about a Star Trek-like ship, but it's not the Enterprise. It's not the flagship of the fleet. It's, one of the, 3,000 ships or whatever it is in the fleet. It's the not-so flagship, with the not-so-best crew in the galaxy, led by Seth MacFarlane's character, who is the captain. And his first officer is his ex-wife, and there are various other Star Trek-like characters on the show as well. So, yeah, I mean, the main difference here, I guess, between Star Trek and The Orville is that The Orville is very much a comedy. And I know that there's been some debate about how comedic it is and how serious it is, and we can definitely get into that in a bit. But I guess just more generally speaking, Justin, what are your thoughts on The Orville?
Yeah, so for my general thoughts, let me talk first about like comedy versus drama, because it is clear that at different points during the show, if you're watching the pilot, that they're going for comedy, like this is the comedic moment here. But there is a significant amount of drama that's around that. So I would say that it's kind of a mix. For me, like I'm actually not too much of a fan of MacFarlane's kind of comedy that you might see on like Family Guy or American Dad. I felt like what was here was a little bit different, although I laughed at some of the things, but for the most part, I was like, wasn't that funny to me. I was actually more interested in things like the ship design and, the homages to Star Trek, especially The Next Generation, and, the drama and the storyline and where it was going and all of that. So before I saw the show, I'd seen the trailer and read about it, and I was kind of skeptical about it. I was like, I'm not too much of a fan of MacFarlane's kind of comedy, and I was definitely looking much more forward to Discovery, but I was like, let me just check this out. It could be interesting. So I came into it maybe with some lower expectations, but I actually, liked it quite a bit. It has its issues for sure, and things that I wish were different about the show, but I did enjoy it for the most part, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing more of it and seeing where they go with it.
Yeah, you know, I was really looking forward to the show. I think for one reason, just because the premise, you know, was something which I found to be amusing, and also, you know, very sort of interesting in terms of sort of like a deconstruction of Star Trek. You know, it's actually, I mean, this keeps on coming up, but, you know, my commentary Trek Stars co-host Max came up with a very, very similar concept a few years ago, which he was planning on doing as like an audio drama called Star Trek Reliable, you know, which was really about, you know, sort of like the same thing, the you know, the one of the lower level ships in the fleet, you know, where these guys really aren't that great. They're kind of, you know, mid-level in terms of performance and stuff like that. And, you know, it was going to, I mean, knowing Max's humor, it was going to be very much sort of a workplace comedy type of thing, which I think is what we're seeing here. But, I, you know, because of that, and also because of McFarlane, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of Family Guy or anything like that, but I am a big fan of the Ted movies. And one of the things which you can kind of see in, you know, especially Ted 2, is that McFarlane, I think, on a philosophical level or on a thematic level, very much gets what Star Trek is about and really sort of incorporates that into his work. You know, I mean, we've talked about this, and someday we will do an episode on Ted 2 and how it really is just Measure of a Man, but with a teddy bear instead of a robot. You know, it straight up is. And it offers the same sort of social commentary that Measure of a Man does. That's the name of the episode, right? Measure of a Man?
It is, yeah. Okay. And you mentioned you were going to do that with Max, and I'd be looking forward to whenever you guys get around to that.
We'll get around to it sooner or later. Sooner or later. But, yeah, you know, that stuff, and I mean, the fact that, you know, it's very well documented that McFarlane is a Trek fan to the point of him actually appearing on numerous episodes of Enterprise and everything like that, it really had me excited to see this show. And then when I heard that people like Branham Braga were working on it, I became even more excited, because like there was this thing that I went to at DePaul University here in Chicago like a year or so ago, where Branham Braga was like giving a speech, and he was talking about, like, someone asked him, like, are you going to be working on Discovery? And I think this really kind of gets to what it is that we're kind of going to be talking about here. Someone asked him if he was going to be working on Discovery, and he said, probably not, and honestly, I don't think that I should, because, you know, I've had my time, I've you know, given my take on the franchise, and I think it's time to let someone else get a shot. And then he said, however, I am working on another show, which is a science fiction show, which is based on a ship and blah, 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 and, you know, it's going to be really interesting to get back into that arena, into that form of storytelling, because I haven't done it for a few years now. And that was sort of like my first signal that, like, this show might not be what we think it is. It might not be just straight up like Galaxy Quest style, you know. It might be something more, and something more like Star Trek than we think, you know, not just a parody. And I think in a lot of ways it is, you know. It really does sort of, or it looks like it's going to try to deal with issues the way that Star Trek does, and has a very similar format, you know, and structure and all that stuff, but it does it more comedically, you know. I mean, in a similar tone to maybe some of the more comedic episodes of Star Trek. And yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I as far as what actually worked or didn't work in the episode, I think that it worked for the most part. You know, I mean, some of the jokes did not land like I thought they would land, and or like I had hoped that they would land. And some of the jokes, you know, I think were really funny, but also not just jokes for joke's sake, but commentary on Star Trek, you know? And the way that they sort of like integrated those things into the plot, I thought was really good, because it works on this sort of like meta level. Like, for example, the seatbelt gag, you know?
Yeah.
It's like everyone criticizes Star Trek for not having seatbelts. Here they're like, oh, we have seatbelts and we're going to use them to our advantage in order to advance the plot. You know?
And I really like that scene where it was just such a simple thing to just resolve it. Like, oh, you have a gun, but we've got seatbelts. Here you go. Mm-hmm. that I actually really liked. Yeah, and it is a commentary on not seeing that in Star Trek. And one of the things that I noticed by its absence is not seeing a transporter,
yeah.
Which I thought in some ways, when I thought about it later, might have been a bit of a commentary on Star Trek. And I kind of agree with it. I feel like for all the stuff that you see in Star Trek, the ability to take someone apart completely and scan the information and then beam them somewhere else and kind of put them back together, I feel personally is one of the most unlikely things that we'll see. It looks really cool, but when you think about it, it's just like, I think in 300 or 400 years we'll still be, you know, going down to a planet in a shuttle, like in the Orville, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things where it's embedded into the DNA of Star Trek, but when you step back and look at the reasons for it in the first place, it probably does more harm than good, right? I mean, the reason why it existed on the original series is because, I mean, basically for budgetary reasons. They couldn't figure out how to get people from ship to ship, you know, and have these shuttle pods or whatever. It seemed too time-consuming, too, you know, costly and everything like that. Then they added them like 3 episodes later, but, you know, whatever. You know, it definitely was like a storytelling and a time-saving thing. And then when you start dissecting what it is that transporter does, it, I think, ultimately causes more harm than it does good. And, you know, when you're constructing a show from scratch, even if you are taking all of your inspiration from Star Trek, you still have the ability to say, yeah, I'm not going to use that thing because, you know, I think
there's another reason, because if you did have a transporter, then it would seem, you know, even more like it's taking even more from Star Trek, because a transporter is so much associated with Star Trek more than, you know, other science fiction. I think that might have been one of the reasons, but I actually like that it wasn't there, because I do think it's kind of unrealistic that we'll have something like that.
Yeah, true. And you already have things like warp speed and, you know, even the configuration of the bridge and all that stuff. So, you know, I guess it's good to differentiate where you can. Speaking of the similarities to Star Trek, you know, there's a lot of people, like we were saying, working on this show behind the scenes who worked on the Next Generation era, a lot of Enterprise people in particular. Now, this first episode that we saw, it was written by McFarlane and it was directed by Jon Favreau. But, you know, other people who are going to be working on this show include writers such as Brandon Braga, David A. Goodman, Andre Bormanis. Directors include Robert Duncan McNeil, James L. Conway, Jonathan Frakes, Brandon Braga, who never directed an episode of Star Trek. So I'm really curious.
That'll be interesting, right?
Yeah. Especially since, I mean, God, he's become such a great director in the meantime. You know, the episode that he did of Cosmos, the pilot for Cosmos, is just stunning. And I can't wait to see what he does in this format. But the design, you know, of both the ship on the outside and the inside, everything, you know, down to the fact that, again, not in this episode, but in the series itself, Marvin Rush, the cinematographer who worked on all of the Next Gen era shows, really created the look of that era for Star Trek. He's going to be the cinematographer on the Orville. What do you think, first off, about them hiring all those Star Trek people to do this, what some people consider to be Star Trek parody?
Well, I mean, I think it makes sense because for McFarlane, he wanted to do kind of an homage to Star Trek. So, you know, he's been in some Star Trek episodes, but hadn't been involved creatively in Star Trek. So why not bring in all of these people to kind of put in some of that feel, and he could turn it into something that's a little bit different. I think it makes a lot of sense to do that. And it does contribute to a certain look and feel. Like, even if you think about, you know, on the Orville, the bridge is pretty well lit, like you often see on the Enterprise D, and, you know, the way the stations are laid out and things like that had some similarities. I mean, I think that it just makes a lot of sense, almost as a shortcut to be like, hey, we're going to be making this sci-fi show that's inspired by Star Trek. Let's bring on some Star Trek people so that we can really concentrate, you know, on what the story would be and what our take on it is, and just have kind of, you know that we can do something, you know, solid for sci-fi that people will recognize as inspired by Star Trek.
Yeah, it's almost as if they wanted to, you know, I mean, I don't know, I guess you do see this with a number of comedies and things like that, where they get, you know, like the top people in the industry or in their field or whatever in a genre to do, you know, to let's say photograph a movie which is a parody of that genre. I mean, the one that I, you know, think of off the top of my head is National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1, you know, which was photographed by the same guy who, you know, did movies like, you know, or shows like 24 and things like that, you know, like a top level action cinematographer who's going to shoot it straight. Or another one which comes to mind is Bill Pope photographing Team America World Police, where it's like, this is an action movie with puppets, but we're going to get the guy who shot The Matrix to do it so that it looks like an action movie, and the humor comes in the juxtaposition between, you know, this extremely slick style and the fact that all the actors are puppets, you know?
Right.
And I mean, I kind of see that here, you know, with in terms of the design and everything. Like, there's nothing to distract in terms of like visual gags, you know. At no point is it like super over the top crazy, you know, environments or bridge elements or lighting schemes or anything like that. It's almost like, let's just take these characters and these situations and put them directly on, you know, let's say the Bridge of the D or whatever. I mean, you could totally see this show existing on a Federation starship, you know.
You really could. I mean, and I think it's really, you know, beautifully shot in some places, and the design and the models. I think they even have physical models for like the shuttle and maybe even the Orville itself, which I was surprised when I was reading about that. But it gives it a certain feel for that era. And what I actually, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, I think, to the Next Generation and its look. But what I was maybe most surprised by was, there are parts that made me think of the motion picture where they're just kind of doing these shots around the ship for a while. I mean, of course, it doesn't last as long as in the motion picture, but like the way that they're doing that and the music swells up and you're seeing, you know, these beautiful shots of the ship, the way that they do it, I mean, it feels like you sense the scale of it. And there was another scene where they have like this gathering the crew together, and it's like in the rec room in the motion picture where you get all the people together. So they were kind of taking from that as like an introduction to the show, as well as kind of the Next Generation elements. I thought that was interesting to see.
I definitely got that motion picture vibe. I think like the entire, you know, almost first half of the episode is very much structured like the motion picture. You know, it starts with the guy, you know, taking command of the ship after, you know, well, flying to the ship, you know, and that those beautiful, you know, sort of like glory shot type of things of the Orville, And then, you know, like you're saying, you've got the crew meeting, you know, where everyone's in the rec room or whatever it is, and, you know, we're introduced to the individual crew members. And then, just to take it one step further, the very first thing that they do is they need to stop off at a starbase to pick up the first officer, who is someone from the captain's past who he's not expecting to see, you know? So,
yeah.
I definitely got that same vibe. And then when you get beyond that, I think that it is also a very typical Star Trek story. You know, maybe, I mean, not specifically Next Generation, but, you know, it could really fit in almost any Star Trek series, the idea of, you know, going to a planet under, you know, a false pretense and then finding out that there is, you know, a looming threat and needing to deal with that and all this stuff. Even had some time travel in there, you know, which is always a good thing in Star Trek, I suppose.
Yeah, and it reminded me of Encounter at Farpoint. Like, they get to Farpoint, there's this mystery. What's the mystery? Except the twist on it here is that the guy's really forthcoming. Like, let me just show you what's going on here that we want you to know about. Whereas in Farpoint, the guy is really just trying to sweep it under the rug and not tell you what's going on. So I saw some similarities with that. Now, as far as what they were going for, it felt like in the end the story was like, we've got a cool invention. There's some enemy that wants to get that invention. Let's fight them off. So it didn't feel like it had quite as much depth as you see in a lot of other places in Star Trek. I'm hoping that maybe they'll go a little bit deeper, because even Farpoint, with all of its flaws, is really about, you know, coming to an understanding of a different life form and a different way of communication and all of that. And this wasn't really about that. It was just, there's this valuable weapon. The enemy's trying to get it. Let's make sure to, you know, spirit it away. So I hope that maybe within this context they can go a little bit deeper. But it did have, you know, I think a Star Trek kind of feel, like there's this kind of science fiction mystery that's going on, and you have to deal with some of the consequences. So it has similarities to some parts of Star Trek for that.
Well, kind of like, I guess, delving in a little bit deeper into that point and the idea of, you know, maybe making things thematically more like Star Trek in the future. You know, the fact that the writing staff includes Branham Braga, David A. Goodman, and Andre Bormanis, I think is really kind of telling in that regard. You know, Branham Braga, in a lot of ways, makes perfect sense to be, you know, sort of McFarlane's right-hand man, because, you know, he's written more Star Trek scripts than anyone else in history, you know? And then David A. Goodman, I think, is also really interesting, because he's really someone who's had one foot in each of these worlds, you know? He did work on Enterprise. He did write Star Trek for a couple of years after being a huge fan, having written things like Where No Fan Has Gone Before for Futurama and stuff like that. But then, you know, the thing which he's probably known for even more than that is his work on Family Guy, where he, you know, ran that show for years. So the idea of sort of melding, you know, the humor of McFarlane with the, you know, dramatic storytelling of Star Trek, in a lot of ways, like, David A. Goodman is sort of the physical embodiment of that philosophy. So what do you think about the idea of this show, which is, you could say, primarily a comedy, making a conscious effort to hire people like Branham Braga and Andre Bormanis, who, as far as I know, have never written any comedy, you know, at least straight up comedies in their career, to, you know, have a pretty heavy hand in crafting this show?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it says the intention is for it not just to be something that's funny, but for to be imbued more with the kinds of themes and ideas and things that make you think that you see in Star Trek. What I'm also fascinated by is that, I mean, Andre Bormanis was, you know, writer and producer for Star Trek, but he started out as a science consultant. And I'm also interested in the things that they could bring in as far as scientific concepts, not just, you know, moral dilemmas or things that you usually see in Star Trek that make you really think deeply, but also what kind of, you know, scientific aspects that you can bring in. You know, one thing I was noticing because I rewatched the pilot episode of the Orville today is that unlike Star Trek, you don't see like a chief engineer or engineering or what makes, you know, the ship run. They just reference like, oh, they have these different engines on the back and something makes it go. But what's really important is what's on the bridge. So I thought that was an interesting difference, which can take it a little bit away from more of like a science and engineering aspect. I hope that they might bring that in a little bit more. That's the one, besides the transporter, that's the one kind of Star Trek element that felt like it was missing.
Yeah, and they even combined their science and engineering officer into one person. It's the robot guy, you know, but he's,
oh, that's true,
he's science,
yeah,
and engineering, you know, whereas usually on Star Trek those things are split. So it'll be interesting to see, yeah, how they do deal with that. It may be, you know, a little further down the line they can, you know, come up with some engineering sets or whatever. I can't imagine them not having engineering on this show at some point. But
I don't know, unless the idea with combining that officer is that those things are just kind of automated and nobody needs to be like in an engineering section.
That could be. That could be. It is interesting, though, just in, as far as the sets are concerned, they do feel very next generation. But the thing that kind of struck me about them, which I'm assuming is because of an advancement in technology, is everything looked next generation but bigger. You know, it didn't feel nearly as claustrophobic. Like, all of the hallways seemed to be taller and wider. Mm-hmm. There were a lot more windows and everything. And I think that that's kind of cool, because much like Discovery is doing, you know, by not, you know, mimicking what, for example, the cage looks like, you know, this show, while it's definitely taking its visual cues from things like Next Generation, it's also updating that aesthetic for the times. You know, we don't have to have claustrophobic sets like that anymore, but you know, we can open things up a bit. But at the same time, it still feels like this is how it would look in 1987 had the technology existed back then, you know?
I agree in one sense. Like, the hallways definitely look like wider and taller. And when you're looking from the back of the bridge and you see like this big, you know, window that they can look out of, kind of much like in the Kelvinverse, you have kind of that to see out the front of the ship. When you look at it that way, it looks much bigger. But when you're looking, you know, from the front of the bridge backward toward the captain's chair area, I actually felt like it seemed smaller than like the Enterprise D bridge, which, you know, has all these stations and the ramp and all of that. So in some ways it felt larger, in some ways it felt a little bit like smaller and closer in certain shots.
That's true. I guess, yeah, I mean, I was thinking more of, I guess, like other places in the ship. The bridge did definitely seem smaller, and it did definitely feel kind of cheap, you know, like the whole thing almost felt like a set on, you know, some sort of micro budget, you know, Star Trek fan film, like very, very bare bones. I mean, like the captain's chair, I know someone asked, you know, McFarlane on Twitter if it was comfortable, and he said it was like a massage chair, but you look at it and it looks like something that you bought from Fry's, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that I was surprised by is that you see McFarlane's character going up and down the stairs from the bridge, and I'm like, no turbo lifts, nothing like that. I mean, there's like all these different staircases. It felt like it was just maybe easier to just like have a set with stairs than to have like the separate, you know, kind of turbo lift kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I found that to be a little odd. I was like, well, maybe there'd be like a stairway off to the side for emergencies, but really 400 years from now, you wouldn't have, you know, some kind of turbo lift like system.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the other thing about that is sort of like the effects, they didn't really hold up too well. I mean, there's things about them which I like. I like the design of the ship and everything, and I like kind of like what they were doing with them creatively, but you can tell that they just didn't have enough money to put into like a certain level of refinement that you would probably expect from Star Trek. I mean, I kept on thinking about that initial preview where you see Discovery leaving, you know, space dock or whatever it is, and how everyone complained about how cheap it looked. And most of the time when we were seeing like visual effects shots in this, I kind of got the same impression, you know?
Well, I mean, it feels like they spent like a lot of time, a lot of money, like on the exterior of the ship and doing those shots and all of that. But like when there's the space battle, one of the things that I noticed was that it's like they're kind of like just directly facing each other and just trading like these little shots going like straight across. I mean, it seemed very different than you might see, you know, in a space battle in Star Trek, where there's more like motion. And I mean, they gave a sense of motion when you were inside the bridge and they were supposed to be like going around a little bit, but it just felt like it was a little static in certain places.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It still had some cool bits, you know. I mean, like when they're hugging the donkey, you know. I mean, that scene really did work well, I think, on a visceral level. I also really liked what I'm assuming is sort of an homage to the cage when, you know, the Orville is leaving space dock, I think, and it pans by the skylight or whatever it is of,
yeah,
you know, the bridge on the Orville, and you see inside the bridge. That was pretty cool.
That was cool. And I liked when it's leaving space dock, also you see the moon in the background. That's just something that you don't really see much in Star Trek. It was just a nice little, so there were like nice little things there that I was looking at and I was like, this is pretty cool. But there were other parts where maybe they could have done a little bit more.
Yeah. So, okay, one final question that I have, I guess, which we've kind of danced around a little bit, but going back to kind of what Brandon Braga said, you know, at that seminar or whatever it was, where he's like, I don't think that I should be doing new Star Trek because it's someone else's turn, but I do like getting back into that type of storytelling with the Orville. What do you think about, and obviously, like we were saying, there are a number of people working on Discovery who have worked on the other shows and movies and stuff like that, but what do you think about that idea of, you know, this show being more of an homage to Next Generation, you know, but it not being Star Trek? You know, I mean, that's something that, you know, McFarlane has said, which a lot of people have considered to be rather controversial, where he's like, you know, if you want real Star Trek as you know it and love it, the Orville is where it's at, not Discovery. What do you think about that idea? What do you think about the idea of these people still doing Star Trek type shows but not doing Star Trek specifically? And what that means in relation to the product that we're getting. Like, will it be more Star Trek than Disco, quote unquote, or will it be just a different thing?
Yeah, I have a couple things to say about that. I mean, I was disappointed that McFarlane said that, because it's not necessary to say, hey, if you want real Star Trek and you don't like Discovery or where new Star Trek is going, then check this out, because people can check out both of them, you know. But what makes this different is that it can be like an homage to Star Trek, look like the Next Generation, kind of generally have, I guess, a more positive feel. You assume that there's some kind of, you know, better society or better future that's allowing them to have all of these ships out in the quadrant. But what you don't get is kind of the infrastructure and the backstory of Star Trek and of the Federation and the history and where things have been, what's led up to that time, you know, because like for Discovery, there's all of these things that have happened previously in Star Trek that inform it throughout the entire franchise, not just like the cage or the original series era. And, you know, in the Orville, it felt like, this is really cool, but you're just dropped into this place in the 25th century. Who knows what's happened between us and that period of time? Who knows what kind of society that they have, how it works, and all of that. And that's part of what's kind of been built up in Star Trek over the decades. And that is one of the things that I really like about Star Trek, is that you can go into a new episode, like an episode of Discovery, and there's all of this stuff around it, and you understand kind of the world and the universe that it's operating in. And because the Orville just started as one episode, they don't have that kind of thing to fill in. But also, because there is specifically the comedic aspect, and I think there is actually a lot of comedy in Star Trek and a lot that's funny, but it's not the main point. But because people expect to a certain extent comedy from the Orville, I don't know if it would be able to get to the same level as the very kind of best drama and messages that you see in Star Trek. So I think that, you know, I can enjoy it on a certain level, but it'll always be something different.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. I find the whole McFarlane thing to be weird because it does seem, I mean, I understand that he's trying to sell this, and he's trying to sell this to Star Trek fans, a lot of whom were probably turned off by the trailer because, I mean, like, there's that whole thing, you know, which David A. Goodman himself talks about with Where No Fan Has Gone Before, where he played it at a convention and, you know, everything landed, everything was, you know, like a really funny joke, except for two, which no one laughed at, you know, one of them being, you know, here's a collection of all 80 hours of the original series, 10 of which are good, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, there's a thing about Star Trek fans where they're very protective of this franchise in a lot of ways. You know, they'll criticize it, you know, a lot, but it's almost like one of those things where, like, you know, almost like a sibling, you know, where you'll talk trash about them, you know, to their faces, but then when someone else comes in and says something bad about them, then you get, like, really defensive. And I feel like what he was trying to do with that statement was say, look, I'm one of you, I'm a fan, this is not a takedown of Star Trek. If anything, what I'm doing is, you know, lifting it up, or trying to lift it up.
Yeah, and, but I think that that by saying, like, if you want real Star Trek, then come over here to this show, because I think his argument was that Discovery felt darker and more dystopian than, you know, what does that say, for example, about what he might feel about Deep Space Nine, which is my favorite and a lot of fans love, which is darker. I wouldn't argue that it's dystopian, but I think that what Discovery is going for is something within this context of a better future and the struggle and challenge to help maintain that, which I think is perfectly valid and within what you see throughout all of the different iterations of Star Trek.
Right. Yeah. And I agree with that, you know, and I think, like, you know, when that happened, a lot of the people who are working on this Discovery got rather defensive and said, you know, things like, well, you know, McFarlane hasn't even seen the show, so how does he know what the heck we're doing? You know, that sort of thing, which I think is also, you know, incredibly valid. You know, he was trying to sell his product or whatever. He was trying to make a point, and I think he went overboard in that regard. But I think that that also kind of, you know, speaks to what the difference is here. You know, Star Trek Discovery is a new take on the material. You know, whether or not it maintains, you know, what Star Trek has done in the past, it's a new take on the material, and it's by new people. I mean, there's a lot of old people, you know, who have worked on Star Trek too, but, you know, the showrunners are people who, you know, never even watched Star Trek. So it's definitely like a new take on this material. Whereas I think what the Orville is not them trying to do, I don't think that, you know, what McFarlane is saying is necessarily accurate either. And it's not them trying to do Star Trek the next that we all know and love. It's not supposed to be, you know, like this thing for fans of the 90s, you know, era Trek and nothing else. I think what it is, whether he wants it to be this or not, by getting people like Braga to come on board and work on this show, what they're going to be doing is deconstructing that thing that they did for all those years on Star Trek. And I think that that's really, really interesting, because it's going to be a form of, like, self-reflection and a commentary on all that stuff that that they did back in the day. And I think by watching Orville and by seeing what it is that they choose to do or choose not to do, over the course of making this show, it's going to make us look at their older work in a different light. It's going to make us look at the next generation differently and maybe see where some of the strengths and weaknesses in that series are because of what they're doing in Orville. And, I mean, it's two different things completely, and, you know, that and Discovery. And I think both of them are incredibly valid, and I'm glad that both of them exist. And, you know, watching this show really felt like watching Star Trek in the 90s in a lot of ways, and I had a very nostalgic feeling watching it. And I don't want that to go away. I want both of these things. I want Discovery, and I want the Orville, and I'm glad that both exist.
Yeah, I am too, and I think you're right that there's some deconstructing going on, and there were certainly parts of it where it makes you think back to Star Trek, like the seatbelts, or there was even a small part where they're going down to the planet in like a shuttlecraft, and there's just like this little walkway, and they just kind of land on the walkway, and I was like, huh, why don't we see something like that in Star Trek? Why do they have to land so far away and then, you know, walk into the town or whatever? So there are little parts there that make you think about Star Trek and its basis and what it does, and maybe some of the limitations or some of the strengths as you compare it. That's really interesting. That's one of the things that I probably enjoyed the most about the Orville. It wasn't the comedy, really. It was more just seeing their take on you know, ship design and bridge design, and, you know, the different ways of doing things and of how things might work in the future. Like, there's another small thing, like at the beginning of it, you know, Seth MacFarlane's character is in like this personal transportation device that kind of flies and just kind of lands near his window. And I'm like, why didn't we see anything like that in Star Trek? You know, little things like that make you think, and I really appreciate that. And I hope that it kind of continues what it's doing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So any final thoughts on the Orville?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just to sum up, it was something that I wanted to check out because clearly it's inspired by Star Trek and probably especially the Next Generation. I was kind of skeptical about it, but I really liked it more than I thought I would. I hope that, you know, for some of the comedy that they, I guess, are going to continue to have, that it's a little bit stronger, because I only laughed at a couple things, really. But I'm just really interested at this take and seeing Star Trek people work on this sci-fi show that's so inspired by Trek, and I'm just kind of looking forward to seeing where it goes.
Yeah, I also liked it a lot. I'm going to continue watching it. You know, I think anytime that you kind of like see a comedy like this, you hope that, you know, all of the jokes are going to just, you know, knock it out of the park and everything. And, you know, when some of them don't particularly land, you know, you're a little disappointed at times. But I mean, there's a lot of people who are saying like, this show is not funny at all. You know, this show is very, you know, crude and everything. Whatever. I don't care about it being crude. I mean, as long as it's funny, you know, that's cool. And yeah, some jokes I thought didn't work, like the whole thing with the marble, you know, versus the mint. I mean, that's just kind of like a,
you know,
what made me
laugh that I was surprised at was the guy asking about having soda on the bridge, because I was like, that's something somebody would really ask, and it's just a funny thing to think about.
And yeah, and that's the thing which I think really works in about this show, which is the idea of, in a lot of ways, making it more realistic than Star Trek. You know, I mean, in some ways it's not, because, you know, there's obviously things which are just done for laughs, like the idea of, you know, there being a pizza party on the surface, and that being like a reason for them to not be, you know, coming back up to the ship or whatever. But things like the soda, I mean, that is like a real world thing, which people do. You know, if that was asked in real life, it wouldn't be funny. So it only makes sense that conversation did occur at some point on the Enterprise. We just didn't see it because it didn't, you know, mesh with the tone of the story which was being told. But I do love that stuff. It really does sort of humanize it. And, you know, like we're saying, or at least like I was saying, I mean, I think that seeing that from Star Trek creators is kind of their way of saying, like, this is something which we wanted to do on the show. This is something which we always thought of, but it obviously didn't fit in the stories that we were going to tell. But now we can kind of, like, comment on that, comment on the maybe not so realistic portions of the franchise that we all know and love, and look at it that way. So yeah, I don't know. I thought it was really interesting. I'm really, really glad that it's out there, and I can't wait to see more of it, especially, you know, in the coming weeks when we're going to get to see more involvement from Star Trek people themselves and see what they have up their sleeves. So yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned something also that I really like about it. You know, this isn't the flagship. This isn't the best crew. And there's all kinds of, like, everyday stuff that goes on, and I think that's just a nice contrast to what we usually see in Star Trek, where it's like, these people are at the highest level, we're on the flagship, we're at a really important station or a powerful ship or something like that. It's just something a little bit different, a little different take that you could imagine happening on some other ship in Star Trek that just doesn't get much love and is just, you know, out there doing its thing.
Yep. Yep, it's the USS Reliable, so...
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right, well, it's been fun talking about the Orville today, but that's not all we're talking about on Trek FM this week, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
Oh, Matthew, I'm doing just fine. You know, it's always fun every week to hop on here and talk Star Trek books and comics with you, and... I don't know if you realize this, Matthew, but this is our 200th episode of Literary... Wait a minute, Matthew. We don't host this show anymore.
The 602 Club.
I honestly was thrilled with the way that they set it up because, like you said, sort of like Russian dolls, I guess, is a good way to explain it. You introduce one character in this existing show, and then it leads to that character's own show, which leads to the next one's own show.
The Edge. A Star Trek Discovery podcast.
There were a lot of comments talking about this roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. You know, yay, I'm so excited, Trek's on. Oh, it's a prequel. You know, oh, mm-hmm. I saw the first trailer and I loved it. Oh, Brian Fuller's no longer working on it. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're getting all this diversity. Oh, look at the Klingons, right? And you could just see it. Seriously, some fans have gone through some serious roller coaster rides.
To the journey!
And so I could see the Hirogen viewing themselves as very noble, very civilized. They don't let their prey suffer, but really they're doing these horrific things, just like we do here in the real world when we have to go fight wars.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they go home and they write an epic poem about it, and that makes it okay.
the Hirogen equivalent of Beowulf.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts and get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows, and in most third-party apps. And you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to contact us. The best place is probably to join the larger conversation on the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum on Facebook. If you just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, we should come right up. If you want to find us on Twitter, our handle is at TrekFM. If you want to find us on Facebook, we're at facebook.com/TrekFM. So Justin, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek FM, co-hosting Earl Grey with Amy Nelson and Richard Marquez. That's our dedicated TNG podcast. You can also find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek, and I'm currently tweeting about my Season 3 TNG rewatch. And you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and you can also find me right here on Trek FM doing The Edge, which is our show about Star Trek Discovery. And this week we did a live episode talking about the Orville with Brandy and Bruce, and you can find that in your feeds for The Edge today as well. And you can also find me on thenerdparty.com doing a show called Great Shot Kid, and you can find me on commentarytrackstars.com doing a show called Commentary Track Stars. We'd like to thank our associate producers today, Chris Steftenagel, Jeff Sutter, and Norman C. Lau. Thank you very much for your support, guys. If you want to be like Chris, Jeff, and Norm, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm and become a patron of the network. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce and host and distribute these things, and we really appreciate any support that you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the info at patreon.com/trekfm. All right. Well, that's the Orville. It's been fun discussing the other spaceship show, you know, today. But I'm you know, Disco only a couple weeks away at this point. And then we'll have two, just like the 90s. I'm excited. I don't know. Well, thanks again for joining me, Justin. And I'll be back next week with John and probably Brandon from Warp 5 to maybe do another Enterprise movie night.